Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to I Have a Strange Story podcast. Hi, my name is Rebecca.
I'm Lindsay.
And this is the show where two sisters retell your strange and paranormal experiences. And if you like this show, please share it with your friends. Give us a nice review. It really helps us get our show out so that we can have more stories to retell. Anyways, we took the summer off because we're going to do some seasons now, I think. And we had a lot going on this summer. So, Lindsay, do you want to tell them about your summer?
Sure. That leads us to our first announcement. Well, so we're in season three now.
Season three.
Yeah. We've been doing it for three seasons. How many years? When did we start in 18?
Yes.
Yeah. So was it November 18th?
Yeah.
Wow. Of 2018. Yeah.
Lindsay.
So wait, how many years is that? Five? We've been doing a podcast for 5 years.
Have we?
I think so. 2018,
yeah, you're right.
Dude. 5 years. I know.
I mean, we did take
insane.
That hiatus where we were like, we're done, and we gave our tearful goodbyes, and then we were like, we're back.
I don't think you ever posted our goodbye one either.
Oh, shit. Really?
Yeah, you never posted our last episode.
Oh, you know why? Because, okay. Anyways, let's continue.
On with the show.
Yes.
Okay. So we took a summer break. One of the reasons I needed a summer break is because I moved across the fucking country, dude.
Yeah, you did.
I moved to a state where I say, yo, and get the fuck out of here. And like, I'm walking here. Like, those are part of my everyday vocabulary now. Because I'm a city gal.
Uh-huh.
I live in Philadelphia now.
Congratulations. Burr, 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 burr.
It was a big move, dude.
Yeah.
But these are the things that happened, too. This is crazy, actually. This is... Okay. So, we talk about the pattern sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
The app that, like, is your birth chart. And, like, it tells you, like, what's going on with your life and all that shit. So, the pattern for me has been 100% on point with everything that was going to happen. And, like, it's, like, everything aligned for me. So, I had to get a new job because I needed complete remote. Because my job in Texas, I had to go into the office.
Mm-hmm.
And it all just fucking happened. I got the job.
Yep.
Like, right in time to put in my notice and to move across the country and, like, have this, you know, I took 2 weeks off to do it all. And then Ruckus got a new stroller. And he really needed it because the city streets are not the same as the parking lot at my old apartment in Austin, Texas.
Yeah.
But Ruckus loves it. He makes friends wherever he goes. And I think he helps me make friends, too, because people love him.
He's so cute, you guys. I don't know if you've seen Lindsay's dog, but he's fucking precious.
The people who love him the most are men. Like, I will be walking by men who, like, look kind of rough and, you know, I just want to get by them.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be like, hey, and they'll start doing baby talk to Ruckus.
Aww.
I know. And they're and a lot of people ask me, a lot of men say, I bet you treat your man this way. And
what,
like, I'm always like, push him in a stroller.
I was like, no. You mean stay home with him all the time and take care of him?
And let him abuse me emotionally? Okay, maybe. No, I'm just kidding. In the past, I may have been guilty of it, but pushing in a stroller, no.
No way.
But it is pretty interesting to see. People love it so much. And then I got a new carrier for him, too, that I sent you the picture,
yeah,
where I can, like, strap him to my chest.
Yeah, it's really adorable, you guys.
Oh, he loved it. He was so relaxed. Because in his old one, it went over my shoulder. And I would sit down and he would kind of have to be to the side of me.
Mm-hmm.
And he would kind of get upset. And so now he's just on my chest and he just, like, completely relaxes. And he's like, thank God.
That's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lindsay takes Ruckus everywhere that she can with her. So it's very useful. And it's so cute.
Oh, I know. My God. He gets so much attention.
He loves it.
Yeah, he loves it. Everybody loves him. He makes a lot of people happy. There was a child. One of the parents wasn't watching their kid, mm-hmm. and it was a little kid. He was like 3. And he turned and started running towards me to pet Ruckus and his stroller. And I had to put my body, and I felt so bad. I had to put my body in between them and grab the child's arm. And I was like, no, 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 he'll bite you, because he will bite a bitch. he'll bite children. I don't know what, he just doesn't like children. He bit a child this summer already.
Lindsay.
He just doesn't like kids. I know. He doesn't bite adults, but he'll bite kids. Okay. Wait, I have one more announcement.
Okay.
So, you remember the last time that I went through divorce, and one of the things that I talked about was how early in my relationship with the guy I was married to, I thought a CD was stolen. And then once we got divorced and split everything, I found the CD, and I was like, oh, there that is. But like our whole relationship, I'd blamed his friends for stealing my CD.
Yeah.
So, you know, the attachment that we have that goes from our Focusrite to our, like your iPad or your laptop. Uh-huh. It's the white attachment.
Yeah.
And it's specifically for Mac stuff or whatever. Wait, do we still call them Macs?
Yeah, that's fine.
We call them
Apple. Yeah.
Okay. So, with my last ex, one day he was like, he saw it and he was like, hey, is that mine? And I was like, no, it's mine. I've had it a really long time. It's for my iPad and it's how I record stuff. He was like, well, I had one and it's gone. And I was like, I don't know what to tell you. This one is mine and you can't have it. So I moved. And now I have 2 of them. So, like, I struck again.
Oh, my God, dude.
I know.
There was a time in Lindsay's life, and maybe this is something that still continues to this day, but anytime something was missing of hers, it was like somebody stole it. Like, somebody would come into her house and steal one thing. Just the one thing that she needed. And every time it was the old somebody stole it. And then you found it. And you'd always tell me that you found it.
It's still very strong. Mm-hmm. Because when I moved here, mm-hmm. I couldn't find my tennis shoes for a little while.
Yeah.
And I mentioned to my boyfriend, I was like, somebody must have stole them out of my car. And he was like, I really don't think anybody stole your fucking tennis shoes out of your car. And I was like, I really think they did. And then I messaged him and I was like, I found my tennis shoes. They were just buried in some clothes. So it's still going strong.
I like
it. It's still my jam.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
It's been with you. It's like the longest relationship you've had, I think. Is your relationship that somebody is thieving from you.
Oh, man. Anywho, that was a fun announcement. I don't think I told you that yet.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Well.
Anywho, what are your announcements?
Well, my announcement is that I as well moved. I didn't move out of state. I just moved to a different city in Colorado. And that kind of leads me into the first story.
Oh,
because it's
nice.
Mine. I have. So I'm going to tell you guys about the shroom experience, the shroom trip, the shroom journey that I had a couple of weeks after moving into my new place. And I listened to this book called Being Human by Dr. Martin Ball, and he talks about how having trips is important for like discovering who you are and working through stuff. And he actually recommends taking
get it right, girl.
5 MHMDO, something like that. It's a chemical in the brain that naturally occurs.
Okay.
And I guess there's maybe a synthetic form or if there's a natural strain, I'm not sure where it comes from, but that's not what this show is about. So he talks about doing it by yourself and really just getting to know yourself. And this takes, I feel like, kind of a lot of guts, at least for me, because I've never done anything like that by myself. I've done it before. I've had shroom trips before, and I've talked about that. But I've never had one by myself. And so I got in contact with somebody that I knew that had them. And I was like, give me enough for one person. And like, just on a side note, she gave me two doses and I didn't know that it was two at the time. And I took it all. And so I can say that I have had a heroic dose of shrooms. It's a real title, a heroic dose. And it was pretty amazing. And so like just going into it, taking the shrooms at first, I'm going to call it medicine because I feel really weird saying shrooms. I feel like
shrooms.
I know. It feels like a kid in high school, you know?
Yeah.
Do you shroom?
Maybe do some shrooms.
Yeah. I don't shroom.
Let's take some X and drink orange juice.
Oh my God. That's my childhood. I mean, not my childhood. That's my 20s. Oh my God. Okay. So whenever you first take the medicine, it kind of felt like it was an introduction. Like the plant was getting to know me and, I was kind of getting to know it. And so I grinded it up in my like coffee grinder and I added lemon juice to it. And first of all, it was really gross. It was like just thinking about it makes me gag a little bit.
Ugh. Yeah.
Because it doesn't taste good. But so like side note too, if you put your plant in lemon juice, it starts to break down the enzymes, so it's not supposed to irritate your stomach as much, and it kind of starts digesting it so that your stomach doesn't have to do all the work. But my stomach hurt really bad whenever I take this, and so it still
did. Because you took two doses of it.
That may be the reason why.
You took enough for two tummies.
Because I took enough for two tummies. But I used a whole lemon. Whole lemon. Oh my God. I gotta stop talking about that. So in this introduction part, I put on some music and I listened to Grimes and her album called Halifax, and that was just kind of like this transition from, you know, being in a lucid state and then going into like just a journey to go into the plant. And while this was happening, I laid down on my side because my stomach was hurting and I closed my eyes. And whenever I closed my eyes, I saw like just darkness, like swirls of darkness, but they were rainbow colored. And then there was these faces that would look at me and they were like kind of, I don't want to say demonic looking faces. They were like tribal. And I know that's I don't feel comfortable saying that word either, but they were like tribal faces, like old gods or something. And I didn't feel scared or anything like that. And at that point it was just kind of like just an introduction. Like I said, I wasn't out of my head or anything and I wasn't really having an experience. I was just getting the first kind of like body feels and the sensations and then seeing these things on the back of my eyes. And then I had this kind of like these weird visions where I was hiding under something or I was sitting under something and these giants would like bend over and look at me, and they weren't being, you know, they were just kind of being curious or just kind of being like, you can come out now, you know, like everything was fine. And then my cat Kiki, she was like, this looks like a job for me, and she came over there and just like sat on my curled up body. I know. I think that she was my guide throughout this. And I, like cats, they're just, I feel like I've said this before. They're one in and one foot in, one foot out of reality. Like, they're in two different realms at the same time. And so, like, cats are really good for people who are tripping, at least in my experience, because I feel like they know what you're going through, and they're there to ground you, and they're there to kind of guide you. So it was really cool having her with me. And she's not that type of cat. Like, she likes to hang out with me, but she usually doesn't get in my lap. And then just as the process went on, it was really hard to, like, open my eyes. I am sensitive to hallucinations or visuals whenever I take medicine or the plant. Shrooms. God damn it. I don't know what's worse.
Shrooms.
Whenever I take shrooms, I'm just going to say it like that. Every time I say it, I'm going to be like, shrooms. I just get really sensitive to, like, hallucinations. And so I had to keep my eyes closed because it was too bright, even though I took this at night and there was no lights on.
Oh, man.
I know. And so, like, the room that I was in looked hazy, and, like, there was geometric shapes that were coming down from the ceiling, and they were sparkly and they were rainbow color. It's really beautiful. I get the same visual every single time I do shrooms, and it was, it feels like there's something above me the whole time. It's really pretty. And that's whenever I kind of know that things are getting serious. And at one point I opened my eyes, which is really difficult for me to do, and I saw all that, but, like, everything was sparkly and fuzzy. Like, I can't explain it, but I could not focus on one thing. And that's whenever I knew I was going in deep, man. There was no going back. Oh. And I just said to myself, like, this is what I wanted. And I tried to not get, like, stressed out or feel...
We get that old-fashioned poopy feeling
real fast. Oh, my God. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, anytime I do this, I'm just like, I've done this before. It's probably not going to be as strong, you know, like, your tolerance level builds. I've only done it, like, I think 4 times and over the past 2 years. And then I was like, no, that's not the case. And so I just had to keep my eyes closed the whole time whenever I had this. But it was really pretty whenever I could open my eyes. And whenever I started to kind of get into the experience, first of all, I didn't mention this yet, but, like, the album that I was listening to, it ended. And so, like, it just went to the next song that it thought that I would like. Like, it just picked the song. And it was a heavy metal song with Grimes and this artist named Poppy. And it's called "This Is How We Play Destroy." And I was like, no.
Oh, man.
This isn't happening right now. And so I turned it off. Yeah. And I had the rest of the time in silence. And then I just got this phrase in my head that said, "This is going to feel like you're losing a limb." And after that, I started having visions of, like, and this is all in my head. Of, like, the woods, the outdoors, camping, cabins, and stuff like that. And I felt pulled to connect with people that I had grown apart from. Like, I needed to contact them. Like, I needed to talk to them. Like, I just needed to let them know that I still cared about them. Like, no matter, you know, what was going on. And then I also, in this part, spoke to people that had passed away, and we had conversations about how things were going in my life right now. And I kind of directed this one particular person to other people to help them out. And I was like, you know, I'm good here, but can you go and take care of this person? And that was a really cool experience. And so being able to, I felt like I was just guiding, you know, spirits around at that point. But then also while I was in this kind of woodsy phase of the experience, I had, like, a connection to God. And I always feel like I'm going to cry after I say that, because it was this feeling of great, longing, like this, it would, like I was missing this person. And I said that out loud and I'm like, I miss you so much. And whew. And I was just like, I said, I miss you so much. This is so hard, but I know that this is what I chose. And I felt like I was talking about my life path. Like I'm supposed to be without, a support, like this support in my life, like this deep connection, or that I wanted to get it back. And so that was part of the experience of like, of still being in the woods. And at that point I was like on the ground, I was on the floor. There were so many times I was on the floor. I don't remember how I got there, but I was like on the floor. My head was like pushed up against the wall and I was having these visuals of looking up. I was in the laying down in the forest bed and I was looking up through the trees and I saw this light, and that's whenever I had this connection to, and I'm going to say it's God, and I don't know if it was God or if it was, you know, something else, but it just felt like that energy, like this energy that something greater than me loved me and that I was like loved unconditionally. And then, so after I got through that, and also there was like a shit ton of crying, every time I've done this, except for one time, I have usually spent a good majority of the time crying. And it sounds really terrible, but it's not. Like, it's just this moment of being able to release whatever you need to release without judging yourself and knowing that this is good for you and that you need it. And there's also a bit of humor in this, because I remember laying on my back crying and I was like, I can't fucking breathe. I have to stop doing this. And so like, I would get up, and this, at this point I was still on the floor. And I was like, I need to blow my nose. And I looked up and there's a roll of toilet paper like on my, on the counter. And I just, and at this point I kind of laughed a little bit and I was like, I love myself so much for doing this. So there's still a lot of, there was still just a lot of joy and like humor, even though it was really hard and emotional. It's kind of a strange thing to describe, because it's like I cry a lot, and I don't know if other people do this. I'm a very emotional person, even though you probably don't know that, listeners. But it's just different, you know. It's like it's not a bad thing. It's a very releasing thing and thing that you know that you need to let go of. And like I said, without judgment or without overanalyzing these feelings, these things just come up and you let them go, and then you can move on to the next thing. Because after I got through that, I started visiting like these energetic, like I was in an energetic spirit realm or something. And at this point, I was back on the couch. And I remember, like I said, I don't know how I got there, but I met characters from the book that I'm writing. And one of the characters, her energy, so her name is Muse. And the energy that I got from her is completely different than how I'm writing her in the book. But if you've written stories, or if you are an imaginative person, you get this deep connection with these characters that you make up. And so they kind of become like people, you know, they're part of you obviously, but they're people that you know. But this person, this energy of Muse that I was communicating with and hanging out with was nothing like the Muse that's in my book. And like, she was so fun and relaxing. She was like a pink best friend energy, but also like she had a fry in her voice, you know, like she was, she was funny and we were making fun of stuff like in my book. And I just had so much fun, like laughing with her, and I had to like stop because I was just laughing uncontrollably at that point. And so I know that this must have looked so weird, probably to my pets. Because I was talking out loud and I was laughing and I was just having a really good time after having a crying sesh on the floor.
Yeah.
And then I, but then these other energies that came up were like some of my other characters. I understood what role they were playing. I understood why I named them the names that they are called. And it just kind of made sense to me after that, that these are kind of like my guides or my, I don't know how to explain it. They're energies that have been with me this whole time, even though I'm just discovering them right now. And I was able to understand how I'm going to write my book, what the end is going to be like. It completely changed what I was doing, but I was like, this makes absolutely way more sense than the direction that I was going. And I'm like super, super grateful for that part of it. But anyways, I got to visit all of my, like, all of my other characters, and I got to switch back and forth between energies as well. So, like, whenever I wanted to go down another realm and see where this energy would take me, I would just be like, okay, I'm going to go say hi to them real quick. Bye. And it was really cool. Like, that was the most amazing part. And then for a moment, I became, like, lucid. And I knew that I needed to eat something. I got really hungry. First of all, too, another word of advice, if you're going to take these, it's best to do it on a fairly empty stomach. So, like, I ate breakfast, but it's something that's easily digestible. You don't want anything, like, that's super heavy. And so I was hungry, and I was aware of my hunger, and I wasn't feeling nauseous. And I was like, well, I have to get off the couch again and go get something to eat. And I put an orange in the fridge for myself because I knew that's what I was going to want. And then I just had this journey of crawling on my hands and knees, like playing with my dog. And he was like, girl, leave me alone, because it's like late at night, but he's still in there with me. And I was, like, messing with him, and I was, like, playing with him. I was like, I love you so much, and I was kissing his face. And he just kind of got up and, like, was like, dude, you need to stop. And very gentle with me, but was obviously, like, you're too much right now. And then I just had this visual of me, like, crawling through the forest, not the forest, the desert, which was my living room to the kitchen. And I got to the refrigerator, I saw my orange, and I said, this is my oasis. Like, I was fucking funny. I was so funny to myself. I just laughed after that. And then this part's pretty cool. So after I got the orange, I sat back down on the couch and I had like trouble peeling the orange. And so I just decided to like get as much of the peel off as I could. And then I bit into the orange and it felt like a primal, it felt like a primal experience. Like I was eating the flesh of an animal or something. Like I'd hunted something and I was enjoying the kill. And I know that sounds really graphic because I don't eat meat. I mean, I eat fish, but I don't eat, like, I don't hunt anything. And I, you know, I'm a live and let live kind of gal. And while I was eating it, something was telling me that I needed to take, you know, small bites, don't eat too much or it'll upset my stomach. And then I thought about how, like, I was a goddess at this point, and I was perched in this tree and I was eating this orange, and the orange was like a metaphor to my life, and it was my experience and it was my journey. And as I ate it, I was like, this is what I'm taking into myself, my experience and my journey. And, whenever I got done eating it, there was a seed in my mouth and I spit it out and I said, this is my gift to the world. Mm-hmm. Which now it sounds kind of funny, but it made sense to me. It was like, my gift is this seed of knowledge that I can share, that I can plant, and that I can grow into another orange tree, and that I can, you know, share with other people my part of the journey. And then I also had at the time, so this voice that was telling me to, you know, not to eat too much, visual, you know, came into a vision in my head of another woman, and she sat beside me and she was telling me that that they were always with me, and that you know, they loved me, and they were always by my side whenever I needed them. And then, like, towards the end, things started to fade. You just know whenever it's over, and you're ready for it to be over at that point. And it was like close to midnight, so it was perfect. And so I noticed that, like, the visuals were fading. I was able to open my eyes. I just thanked the shrooms, and I was like, okay, good night, I'm going to bed. But it was a really, and then after that, like, for a week or so, I felt super connected to everything. Like, I felt so much forgiveness in my heart, so much lighter, like the burdens, you know, that I carry with me were gone, and that I could just, I was invincible, and that I could do like anything that I wanted. It didn't take long for those to come back, but it was nice having those couple of weeks not to really worry about things so much. And I didn't sleep well that night either. I stayed up pretty late.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I bet you didn't sleep very well. I mean, that's a lot to go through.
Yeah, it was an emotional roller coaster.
As always.
As they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was fun.
Well, that... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you have a favorite part and a least favorite part?
I didn't have any least favorite parts. Like, even the painful parts that were really sad, and that hurt to visit that emotion and that energy, it wasn't a lingering pain. And it was something that I was able to say, okay, I've had enough of this and I'm ready to move on to something else. So I was kind of in control to a degree of how long I wanted to experience something. Okay. My favorite part, I think, was probably talking and hanging out with Muse, because just being able to laugh and feel like that close and that connection to that energy was really fun. But I also really enjoyed seeing what my book could become, or not what it could become, but like kind of what it was missing. And it was better, like I said, than anything that I've tried to write so far. It was beautiful, and it was sparkly, and it was just a lot of fun. So I think that those were probably my favorite parts. But it's funny, because after you have that experience, or after I have the experience, like, I miss it. Like, it's not a high that when you come out of it, like, you feel bad. Like, I was tired the next day, and my head hurt because I was crying so much. But the overall experience, and just feeling all of these emotions and being able to process them and being able to, like, do it, like I said, without judgment or without anxiety. And then feeling the energy of what feels like a God energy, and feeling like I'm loved and that I'm really cared for. I miss that. And it's something that lingered with me for a long time afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very interesting. That's a lot to share. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, no problem. It was great. I recommend, you know, if you're down for that, if anybody is down for that, to try it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they say about, like, being in a good headspace and stuff like that. And the day of, I was really worried that I was going to have a bad trip, because I've had a lot going on in my life. And I was like, maybe this isn't the best time. And there's also this anxiety of what is going to come up and what I have to face. And there was things that I knew that I was going to have to face and process that I didn't want to. But the thing is like, regardless of where you are in your headspace, whatever needs to come up is going to come up, and you have no control over that. And the more you try to resist it, the worse it's going to be. That's whenever people start having like bad trips and hallucinations, is whenever they are not accepting of the experience that's going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've heard that too. That's the hardest part.
Yeah. That just to be like, okay, you know, I'm just gonna, it's a weird word to use, but just surrender to the experience and to the emotions, and because there's no way that you can resist it. It's going to come out, and it's either going to come out with you purging it by crying or going to the bathroom or, you know, whatever. I don't know why I said going to the bathroom. I guess you can vomit. I don't want to scare anybody. I didn't vomit. But it's going to come out whether you want it to or not. But if you don't hinder the process, it's a lot easier than if you resist it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very helpful.
Yeah. If anybody wants any tips, let me know. And if you've had a trip, I would love to hear it. That's what we do too, is drug stories, but nobody wants to share those with us.
It's a pretty sketchy situation to share sometimes.
True that.
I get it. Mm-hmm. Well, since we were on our hiatus or our summer break, there was some information that was shared about UFOs, yes, and aliens. And I was going to kind of cover, or not kind of, I hate it when people say that. I was going to cover that subject.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to be covering that today. Now I just installing as I look for my fucking notes because my page is turned. There it is. Okay. So essentially, you guys may have heard that over the summer that the government admitted that there were aliens and there were UFOs. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there were posts everywhere. It was all over social media and people were making funny videos saying that they didn't even care because they were too worried about paying rent and all that stuff. Yeah. So I'm here to kind of explain what really happened, because that's not exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. This is what happened.
Tell us a story.
So in July of 2023, July 27th, there was a Facebook post that said the U.S. announced that there are aliens and nobody gives a fuck. So this is what really happened. On July 27th, three former military members testified at a House subcommittee hearing about unidentified phenomena. Mm-hmm. And the Pentagon denied everything about this information that they shared. But essentially the former military indicated that there was a program that the Pentagon was hiding that collects reverse engineering. Mm-hmm. Witnesses testified about seeing, UFOs and aliens. And the purpose of these people coming forward was to discuss the national security threats that come from alleged aliens. Mm-hmm. So all these people, former military, came forward because they're concerned for our country and what could happen. Not our country, I guess, you know, the world. It's kind of a world fucking problem. I'm like, the U.S. I'm like such an asshole. Okay. So the witnesses went on to indicate that the government tried to suppress reports of all of these types of encounters, and that there was a former intelligence officer. His name was David. I think it was David Grush. He said that there was a government program that retrieves reverse engineering of UFOs, and that the U.S. is aware of non-human activity since the 1930s. And what they refer to as otherworldly pilots that are non-human biologies.
I love that. I love that.
I know. I like the otherworldly pilots.
I do too.
Like,
yeah.
Little Foo Fighters or whatever. I don't know. Foods. I don't know. So the Pentagon denies all this information. The Defense Department denies all this information. And a former member who had come forward with all of this information said that he really feared for his life since he came forward. And that his life had pretty much been ruined socially, privately, and professionally by the U.S. government since he had come forward with all this information. So here's a few of the things that people came forward with. So former Navy air pilots alleged encounters with aircrafts in the air. A few of the stories include in 2014 on Virginia Beach, there was a hurricane and there was a pilot in the air and he saw a dark gray cube inside a clear sphere that was stationary in hurricane force winds. So he came forward with that story and he actually founded the Americans for Safe Aerospace to support aviators who have seen UFOs and nobody cares about them. So I say that because it really made me start to think about all of these ex-military and these Air Force, whatever they may be, who have come forward for seeing these aircrafts. And a lot of times they were ignored. They were told not to talk about it. Their evidence was taken and then they never heard anything about it. But can you imagine how scary that must have been for them? And then they're immediately told that they're wrong and those things didn't happen and not to talk about it. And when they do, their careers are ruined.
Yeah, like, I know.
And right? Yeah. So like, I really feel bad for these people. So this guy, you know, founded this place, for folks to be able to talk about what was going on. Another person who came forward was another retired, Navy guy. I can't read my handwriting, so I don't know. Commander. Oh yeah. Retired Navy commander. And he talked about the Tic Tac. Do you remember hearing about the flying Tic Tac? Yeah. So he came forward with his story and he was the man who had taken the video footage of it.
Okay.
And he talked about that experience. And the main message from all these folks were that the U.S. needs to stop with the stigma. They need to put it aside and address the security and the safety of this topic for the residents.
Yeah.
And so they're not saying, is it real? Is it not real? They're like, it's real and we better fucking take care of it. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But my former statement about the man who had founded the that society for folks to be able to come forward and talk about what they'd seen kind of in a safe space. I was like, yeah, what about all these people who have had these experiences? Like, what happens to them? So I dug a little deeper into that. And there is a lot of research. So there's a guy, Christopher Green. He's a professor. And in 2010, the Department of Defense gave him $22 million to do some research. And they wanted him to do research on people who had had these encounters with UFOs or with aliens. What injuries were sustained from them?
That's a lot of money for research, you know?
Yeah.
That's fucking awesome.
And we over here, we're always like, there's no proof. And it's like the fucking Defense Department gave $22 million to research what happens when we have close encounters.
Yeah. We've got the proof.
Jesus. You remember that? You remember that dumb bitch that wanted to come on our show? And he was like,
oh, because he wanted to disprove everything?
Yeah.
This is why. Yeah, I remember that.
Oh my God. That reminded me of him. I was like, you fucking idiot. but either way, I hate that guy.
Yeah, he wanted to, in case so this, you didn't, like, the guy wanted to come on the show to explain to us, a paranormal podcast, why aliens don't exist.
Yeah. And then he was like questioning. He was like, well, that must mean that you do research. And then he went on to explain to me how to do research. And I don't do this very often. Okay. But I was like, dude, I have a master's degree in social research. I know how to fucking research. And he was like, oh, I thought you were just a dumb like me with no like degree. And I was like, I'm not doing this. Like, fuck you. He just immediately questioned us because we were women and because we had a paranormal podcast.
Yeah, of course.
I'm very emotional about this, obviously. I don't know why he did it, but I'm like, it's because I was a woman. Like, I don't know. Okay. But this guy, Christopher Green, he has worked with the CIA since the 1960s, researching all of these types of encounters. So he has seen hundreds of patients that are like special forces and other military after they've had these encounters, which I think is pretty crazy. Yeah. So he says that the symptoms that these people have had, so he's been seeing them since the 1960s, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. They have all had symptoms that are referred to as the Havana syndrome symptoms. So if you don't know what that is, in 2016 is really the first time that people started talking about Havana syndrome. And it's a cluster of like symptoms experienced mostly abroad by U.S. government officials and military personnel. Mm-hmm. And the symptoms range from like pain to ringing in the ears to cognitive dysfunction, all these different things. And it was mainly reported in 2016 by U.S. and Canadian embassy staff in Havana, Cuba.
Okay.
And it's like they were all at this conference and they all woke up having all of these symptoms. And it's alleged that it was Russia and that Russia had done something like with microwaves or something to U.S. citizens. But then it's also alleged that they had some type of third or fourth encounter.
Okay. All of them?
And so, yes, all of them. Jeez. Everybody who was there woke up with these symptoms.
Oh, my
okay?
God. Okay. So wait.
Isn't it?
Hold on.
Okay.
Backtrack. How okay. many people were there?
I don't know.
But they were all from the U.S. embassy? Or from this...
And Canadian.
And Canadian?
Yes. And they... And so 2016 is the first time they talked about it, and they labeled it. They labeled all the mass symptoms that they were having as Havana syndrome, because uh-huh. they were in Havana. But this guy, Christopher Green, is like, people have been having those same symptoms, and I've been researching all these people in the military who've had these same symptoms after encounters. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Wow.
So to add to that, in 2012, there was a program that was funded by the Pentagon that had similar evidence that he has found, mm-hmm. but they also found that people had paralysis and radiation burns.
Oh my God.
After they had encounters. Many injuries, like I already said, are blamed on people being too close to microwaves.
Okay.
Which like, why the fuck do we have microwaves if they're that dangerous?
I know, right?
I mean, I know that's a stupid question because we have a lot of stuff that's really dangerous that we shouldn't have. But I also tell people, go to Europe and go up their stairs and you'll be like, this is not safe. If you are from the U.S., like, there's no handrails, or the handrails have nails sticking out of them,
right.
Or, like, they're narrow. Like, you noticed that, right? In Europe, how life safety is completely different.
Well, everything is so old, and they're like, we're not going to do anything about it, because it's so old, and, like, it's at your own risk. Like, you should be responsible
everything.
For
there's
yourself.
There's signs everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember the hotel we stayed in Austria? Wasn't there a situation with the keys?
I don't remember, but probably.
There was like, it was like they were all skeleton keys to our hotel rooms.
Yeah, so anybody.
And it was like.
Could go into anybody's you room. Could, yeah.
Yeah, and like you could only lock it from a certain, like from inside or outside. I can't remember. No, it had to be inside, mm-hmm. I suppose. But it was just fucking nuts. I remember being like, where are we?
Yeah.
And I was also recovering from motion sickness from going up that mountain on top of all of that. That's another story.
Oh my gosh. That was a lot.
I know.
Yeah, sorry for you.
Yeah. Back to the UFOs. Many people with injuries, like I've described the Havana syndrome, you know, stuff, mm-hmm. They had been really close to a UFO that it had come near them and they had seen it and it moved close to them or, you know, whatever yeah. it was. Some of them hovered, some moved in odd ways, some would appear and disappear. Some people became unconscious, and his research showed that 1 out of 10 people died within 7 years of having these encounters.
Oh my God.
I can't read my handwriting. Sorry.
Okay. Happens to at least one of us.
Yeah. And he even reported that some of these injuries that he's referring to, and they're in the same data, one in 10 people dying within 7 years, some of these encounters were documented at the White House.
Oh my God.
Burr, burr, burr. I know. Okay. So then this leads me to, I do have a story, and it'll be a short story, but I have one.
Okay.
So this goes back to 1980. We're in Texas, and there's two women who are driving down a road after dinner. And they have a small child with them, but, I'm not going to really talk about him because they don't really give much information about him. But the women were driving down the road and they saw a craft that was like diamond shaped that was kind of hovering in front of them. Mm-hmm. And they pulled off the side of the road and they could feel the heat from it. And it was like fire would come out the bottom of it and it would float back up and then it would kind of drop back down. And so they watched it for a while, and they were really scared. They got out of the car and they got closer to it. And then one of the women realized that the kid in the car got scared. So she ran back, to be with the kid, and the other woman stayed out and watched it. And finally, when she went to return to the car, she went to like touch the door handle. And this sounds like classic Texas. Like it was so hot that she had to use her coat, right, to open the door because it was so hot. Yeah. And that's normal. Don't get me wrong. But it had melted.
Oh my God.
And that's not normal. That like it nuts. Had melted. No. And then when she got in the car, she pressed her hand on the dashboard and it was an imprint of her hand because it was melted. And so finally, the craft started to move and they still could see it. And then they saw like 20 something helicopters come and surround it and escort it.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It's a real thing, man.
Yeah. And they identified the helicopters basically as being military. I don't know how you do that, but apparently there's a way to identify that. One of the women started to lose her hair and she started to get really sick and she had to go to the hospital within 2 weeks of this incident. And she was there and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. And they thought they were treating her for burns because she had all these injuries on her skin. And after she'd been there for a while, they realized that she had a radiation poisoning and they had to start treating her for that instead. So she had severe radiation poisoning following this close encounter with what appeared to be a UFO. A couple years later, she got breast cancer.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And they actually, these two women ended up suing the U.S. government over this.
Did they win?
Well, let me see. no agency of the U.S. government possessed any such UFO is what the determination was, and that no military personnel had operated any of the reported helicopters, according to their evidence. So nothing happened to them. So they both died.
Oh, no.
18 years to the day.
Jeez.
After they claimed their close encounter.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lesson for you folks. Don't get close.
What is it?
To the UFOs.
Yeah, don't get out, dude.
Yeah.
Act like you don't see it. That's my best advice. Just ignore all of that shit.
Just ignore
And even if there's, yeah, even if there's an alien in your room, pull the fucking covers over your head.
It never happened. It was never there.
That's all you have to do.
Just roll over.
Because they'll like give you something so you don't remember.
Yeah.
And then just try not to remember.
And then if you do remember, no, you didn't.
Yeah.
Or if you did, you can tell us. But
yeah, I mean, and actually, like, I really think it did happen. Like, don't think that I don't think it didn't happen. Because I know that it probably did. But, you know, that shit scares. I don't play that shit.
No way.
And the fact that I'm even telling this is very risky.
Like, I know, Lindsay.
I don't know what I was
like,
thinking.
Like, this is, this is pretty heavy topic for you. I get it.
It's the riskiest thing I've done in a very long time.
Yeah.
And I just moved across the country by myself.
She's like, she's feeling her power. She's in it.
I am on a roll.
Yeah. She's like, I got this. Aliens, what? And now you're like, no.
I'm like, why did I do that? Did your dog just make a noise in the background?
Yeah, I think he needs to go to the bathroom.
All right. It sounded like somebody said, hey. All right. Well, that's all I got. So I guess that comes to an end of season 3, episode 1.
Yeah. We're glad to be back. We've missed you guys. We've missed doing this. It's spooky season.
Yes.
So give us a listen. Send us your stories. I have a strange let's go, story girls. Podcast. At gmail.com.
Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.